Wouldn't it feel great to know that this year your firm is going to earn at least 20% profit? Of course it would. So I'm inviting you to a free live webinar that I'm hosting on Tuesday, January 22nd, 2018. It's called the Entree Architect Profit Checklist. And during our time together, I'll show you the six essential elements of a proven financial management system for small firm architects. It's not too late to prepare your firm for profit this year. Register now at entrearchitect.com/freewebinar. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 253. And this week, I'm with architect Tabitha Ponte of Ponte Health, and she's building a new healthcare system from scratch. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, FreshBooks, the cloud-based accounting software that makes running your small firm easy, fast, and secure. Spend less time on accounting and more time doing the work that you love. And RCAT, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM, specification, and so much more. Find what you need fast at RCAT.com. Tabitha Ponte, welcome back to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you, sir. Glad to be back.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun one. People have been asking for this one because you were here with us back in October of 2017, episode 189, where you sort of, the phoenix rising from the ashes, told us the story of Tabitha Ponte sort of rebuilding her life, rebuilding her career, and launching Ponte Health. And it was very early on when you sort of shared what you were doing and what your plans were. And there is so much that has happened since then. Yeah. You sort of give us little tidbits every once in a while over at the Facebook group. You always share your knowledge over there. So thank you for doing that. But, you know, when I asked for suggestions in the Facebook group about 2 weeks ago, a bunch of people said they wanted to hear an update on Tabitha Ponte. So here you are.
Well, thank you, everybody, for wanting to hear an update.
Yeah, because it looks exciting from the outside, and I know it's hard, and I know there's downsides, and there's a bunch of garbage that comes with the fun stuff that we're seeing. But I want to hear everything that you're willing to share. So let me just introduce you to anybody who doesn't know who you are. Tabitha Ponte is the CEO and lead architect at Ponte Health. It's a Florida-based architecture and construction services firm exclusively serving the healthcare market. It's all she does. She built it that way, and she's growing this market. Ponte Health specializes in single-source delivery and resource management. She's basically building an architecture firm from scratch while she's building the cities of the future. That's basically what she's doing. And so you can go back to episode 189, entrearchitect.com/episode189 to sort of hear her early years and where she came from and what inspired her to become an architect, that origin story, all the way through to the beginning of Ponte Health. But today I want to hear the rest of the story. I want you to sort of give us a brief reminder of how Ponte Health came about, where you were and why you sort of launched it, and then what have you been doing for the past couple of years to what you're doing today. So why don't we sort of jump back to the beginning and hear a little bit about that.
Okay, so Ponte Health really started because of my own personal experiences in our current healthcare system. So I had a couple of events that were pretty radical, life-changing events, sort of nearly dying. And the second was a little bit of a last straw. So I had a stroke at 35. That has a lot to do with my founding of this company, because through that particular event, where I spent about 5 days in a neurological wing in a hospital, I found that it was very inappropriate in terms of the setting for a stroke recovery. So everything from the very little that I saw the doctors to the way the building was completely inanimate and unhelpful to my anxieties and stresses as the patient, just everything was wrong. And you could call it, I mean, I don't know if I would call it enlightenment, but I kept thinking to myself, if I survived, that I would make my work or my life's work actually change that experience that I had. So to focus on the patient experience through sort of the advancement of healthcare facilities, and alongside that advancement, the advancement of the care itself, or all the sort of intricate activity within those healthcare facilities. So I should point out, the Ponte Health is not just about the infrastructure, but that is the means to the end, and that the end is a more complex or more integrated sort of advancement of the environment of the patient, and then everybody that is sort of a stakeholder in that process.
So you're not just talking about designing hospitals or medical centers and then building them and then handing them off to somebody else. You're talking about redesigning the entire system from scratch.
Correct. It's sort of like real estate is our means to the end, but the end is this more whole, I don't want to call it, I mean, holistic is the right word, but it's this more sort of integral and complete patient experience process that's about actually assisting rather than this alienation and ignorance that I experienced as a stroke recovery patient. So, you know, it felt like I didn't see the physicians enough. It felt like I didn't have enough answers. It felt like the building could have been helping, but was not. So there was a lot of sort of misses, and Ponte Health started around filling those voids. So Ponte Health is as much a technology company as it is a real estate company, as it is a design firm and an innovation firm. I mentioned this in episode 189, that I see us in a very deep sort of research base or environment. And I also mentioned that I would eventually become a health system. I didn't know what that meant during episode 189, but I kind of see, I mean, we've seen it during the past year and a half or so, and it's become a really big portion of my day-to-day work. Like, we still function as a developer, because I should state that when we talked, I was serving people as an architect and as a construction manager and stuff like that. And we've let that pass a little bit. And now we serve people and we do have clients, but as extension developers. So it's a more complete sort of service where we take them from the hand, even before the property acquisition, and we do for them all the way through to just giving them keys.
Let's walk us through that. What is the current status? The current status of Ponte Health. What are you doing from beginning to end? Sort of walk us through a typical project that you're working on.
So you can call us a developer. I mean, I want people to understand that I may be a licensed architect, and I may have a DC license in Chicago and all these things, and construction safety background and government background, but we are a healthcare developer. That is what we do. We do two types of development very specifically. We do, I should say three. So the three types of development are development for physicians and physician groups. So a doctor can literally call me while they're still in practice and say, I need a building, or I want a building. Yeah. How do I do this? You know, would you help me do this? We are a developer for investment. So we develop for people that solely are looking to create an income. So those people generally are foreign nationals. You know, they may want to put in money and create a passive income through rents. So we do that kind of development.
But still healthcare focused.
It's still only healthcare. Yep. But with that particular healthcare focus is sort of like a small office, medical office type setting. So a small medical plaza, medical office. Mm-hmm. And then we do the third more large kind, like Vertical Medical City, where we're developing to be operator. So in the case of Vertical Medical City, we own the building. We're part architect, though not whole architect. I should point out, I've partnered with, maybe I shouldn't say it by will, but with Jacobs as architect of record. And we are owner and we're operator. So, and I'll get a little bit more into the complexity of Vertigo Medical City and how that even came about, but that's where that system, that future view of a system came.
So are you building Vertigo Medical City as sort of the model of what could be?
Yes. And I hear from people, the more I talk about Vertigo Medical City with sort of care providers and physicians and things, I hear from people that is very much going to disrupt healthcare at large with the way that we're doing it. So here's the thing. People think of, well, first of all, people currently treat medical facilities as a building that everybody just visits. But futurists in healthcare know that the future of healthcare is sort of remote, or at least some say at home. But see, I'm sort of in disagreement of both, right? So I think you will always have your medical facility you have to go to, especially for acute and surgical type setting. Like, I don't think you can recover from a stroke in your house. But I believe that what we're doing with Vertigo Medical City is to prove that it's more seamless in your life. And it's a very specific market that we're targeting, because you may have seen that Vertigo Medical City is specifically for aging in place. So we're looking at 65 and over. So I'll give you the story of that. So it's it may be very disruptive to the industry at large, but not from the from the building side, but it's more holistic than that. It's literally a medical city. So there's this medical city trend, okay, that started with Texas, and I'll give you a little bit of a backdrop of that. So there's the Texas medical city that everybody knows. It's very much the current system that we know, where you just go to some campus, as you would in university or some other major campus, and you're sort of driving around and having difficulty with parking and walking 20 million miles and all these things. Then there is a slight advancement of that, which is Lake Nona Medical City here,
where I had
my office previously. Yeah. So that medical city, it's the reason they call themselves that. It was sort of an urban organization around medical facilities. So it's an improvement, right? Where now they're instituting residential into medical campus that is more than one system. So it's almost like an urbanist or an urbanism position. And then there's what we think should be a medical city, where you live here, but you're now resolving problems that have been created by those two, which are like transportation problems and infrastructure problems and mobility problems, especially with the aging. So, you know, like for us, sure, it sounds dumb, Vertigo Medical City, like that I gave it the name Vertigo. But the point is, we completely shrunk the footprint to go as vertical as we could. So, and that had a reason. And the reason was beyond the height, but for improving or helping with one of the biggest problems that I've seen with my clients. Okay, like healthcare clients, where their patients have to walk too far to do everything. And we're just talking about an 80-year-old in a walker, that person should not have to walk 500 feet to an elevator. So that problem was sort of the first resolve with Vertigo Medical City.
Right. Make the footprint as small as possible so the number of footprints are reduced. Footsteps.
Yes. Yep. So so that's where we've been with these sort of three lines of development, and I'll expand on Vertigo Medical City a little bit, but I'll let you walk me through that rather than me sit here and tell you for 40 minutes where we're going with it.
Well, I think you should keep going. I think because it's interesting. As long as it's interesting, because I want to know more, because I don't know anything. All I know is what you've shared.
Okay,
before you started describing what Vertigo Medical City was just now, I didn't know what Vertigo Medical City was. Yeah. And so let's assume that everybody who's listening doesn't know, other than, you know, listening to the title of it and saying, well, it's probably a vertical medical city.
Yeah, literally, that's what it is.
but you're using this as a way to sort of redesign and reinvent medical care.
Correct.
And because the current medical system is so messed up, let's not even get into the mess of why it's a mess. But it is a mess, and I think it's an evolution. We've gotten here because it's been an evolution, and that there's a lot of money involved. And, you know, there are ways to do things because that's the way the people who are making the most money are being, are making
it. That's exactly what's happening. I mean, pharma.
Yeah.
Right. The insurance companies. I mean, these people really are the drivers. But the thing is that people forget that the people is the driver. But they don't know what they need. They're just being told, like, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, and you're going to pay this. I'll give you an example. I went to, I had a stroke scare only about, I want to say like 5 months ago again, where because I had the first one, I was really worried about this one. And I was actually working in construction on one of my clients at the time of design. And I literally got off a roof working construction and into the ER. Like, I got off the roof and walked into the ER. And they kept me overnight. And at the time, I had no insurance because, insurance is costly, especially when you have five, six people in your household.
Yeah, you're a startup.
Yes, I didn't have insurance. And I just got the bill of the insurance-less overnight scare with the tests. And I was really blown away. I mean, I keep hearing people saying that this year that transparency is going to come about. I doubt it. But $40,000 practically for my staying overnight and getting a couple of tests done and getting a couple of pills. It's just crazy.
Insane. Right?
So Vertical Medical City, it really started as a design exercise for my team. And I'm not, no joke.
Yeah.
It didn't even have a name at the time. So I'll give you the way it developed. So I decided that I wanted to create an exercise where we could all be a part of, because it was complex enough and rich enough that we could be a part of as a design team. And it started with my design guys, and eventually I got involved, and we spent a lot of time on Vertical Medical City nameless and purposeless, right? And
so, because it wasn't real. It was an exercise.
Yes, it was just a conceptual
exercise. How many people are in your firm now? Because I know when we last time we spoke, it was basically just you, and you were about to start growing. So how big are you now?
Between external and internal, we're probably about 12 people.
Okay.
Today.
Yeah.
Most of them internal, but I, you know, some external parties that I keep that are higher ranked in either brokers or financial people and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That doesn't account for attorneys, anything like that. Just
right. Your team is about a dozen people.
Yeah. So we started as a conceptual exercise. I said, let's design a medical high rise. I already knew of the walking problem, of the trend, of the sort of horizontal transverse problem that people have. So I already had that in my mind, and that is why we went small footprint, high rise. So the starting point of Vertical Medical City was actually Chicago, on a particular property in Chicago that was on the river, you know, kind of downtown, but it was a property owned currently by the newspaper. And I said, let's design something overpassing the bridge on two split, like a split property, three towers, and let's go to 72 stories. That's sort of what I wanted, or what I envisioned. And we spent months, I mean, months, that's in 3-4 months. But because there was such time spent in the conceptual design process of this thing, it came to be very good. At least in my eyes, it became very good.
And right, from because you were designing it as, if there were no barriers, if there was nothing standing in our way, what would this thing be? There was no budget. There was no client telling you that you have a deadline. It was just, it was like an architecture school project.
Yes. Just design.
Yeah.
And it really became good. Like, or at least what I think is good. You know, that's always very personal to people. It was a very nice blend of contemporary with old very monumental type. And there's some renderings out and about floating. I have them on our wall in the lobby. And eventually I thought to myself, well, why can't we build this, right? So, but before I get there, I decide to unveil the design. And this is really because of the design exercise, because we're an architect-led firm. So I decide to do a sort of an unveiling with a group of people that came to see us in an event that we host every year in January, actually. And it's coming up in about 2.5 weeks for us for the second time. So at that point, I had already identified the name as Vertical Medical City without still having a specialty or a focus on it or anything like that. And I had registered the name because I knew I wanted to do something with that. And so I unveiled it as Vertical Medical City. And the reaction was pretty stunning, but particularly from one guy. So I wish I remember this guy's name, but he had a lot to do with what it is now. So this guy stands up, sort of, you know, making waves and just like, I have to say something. And he says, I'm a journalist. I wish I remembered his name. And he says, my father needs that and he needs it now. And he has Alzheimer's. And I thought to myself, wow, beyond a design exercise, this person was adamant, and he was strong willed. He was like, my father needs this today,
right?
Like yesterday. And he has Alzheimer's. And I thought to myself, okay, so the way that he did that, how strong he was about it and how determined he was that his father needed it, you know, how strong he was. I spent about a week doing research after that onto memory care and the trends in the aging condition. And
so before you revealed it, was it still sort of an exercise and you were revealing it sort of to get some press and not really, maybe someday this will happen, but let's see what happens. Let's get out there and get our name out there.
Yeah.
And then sort of lit a fire under you.
Yes. That literally is how it happened.
Yeah. And gave you a sense of urgency from that point forward.
Well, that guy did, yes. Yeah. And when I looked at the statistics, I was very overwhelmed as to what I found with regards to the tsunami, the silver tsunami, they call it, that is coming. So the baby boomers, okay, that's a trend rising. I think it's more severe than people can imagine. Because the baby boomers in the U.S., but the U.S., from my research, happens to be like fifth in the world. It's that radical that it's a global problem that is beyond measure. So I'll give you a very small sample of the statistics. So by 2050, okay, so that's only 20 years, 30 years from now, over 21%, close to a quarter of the population, are going to be over the age of 65.
Wow.
So that is huge. And that is the world's population.
Yeah.
That is not the U.S. That is the whole planet. So the more I read these statistics and everything about Medicare and Medicaid, I got really deep into things like, for example, that women have more longevity to men by over 10 years. But Medicare and Medicaid were not designed to care for the longevity of those women. They were designed for critical illness and not for chronic illness.
Right.
Like there are some things that just stood out that I'm just like, I have to do something about this. So that's where after about a week of research, just basic statistical research, we decided that Vertical Medical City was an aging in place condition, that we were going to have outpatients, that we were going to have residents, that it was going to be an ALF and memory care, that it was going to come with 500,000 square feet plus of outpatient medical services, that it was going to come with research and diagnostics on property, and you name it, it's coming. So,
it's in Florida.
The first one's in Orlando.
Okay.
So even though the concept started in Chicago, because I'm in Orlando I decided to take this. The first thing I did was go to the mayor's office. Like, I actually walked into one of the directors at the mayor's office and said, listen, I have this project called Vertical Medical City. This is what I want to do with it. I want aging in place. I want to do an ALF. I want to bring it downtown. I want to get the platinum. I want to do this. And he was just so ecstatic because for a downtown condition, that project is a $2 to $3 billion influx to the economy.
Yeah.
So to give you like the short version of the sizing of it. So Vertical Medical City Orlando is 2 million square feet of construction. So it is three towers. And we just... So it's similar to where we started, but it's evolved in that we had to go through an FAA process. We were approved to become the tallest building downtown so far. So right now, for the last 30 years, SunTrust, a banking building, has been the tallest building at 441 feet, and we received approval to become 444. So it's for 30 years, nobody's sort of passed the threshold of the city, but we will. Did magic really when it comes to the land, because we had two different properties. The first, the owner of the property was very relentless in selling it overpriced, as in three times the market value. And I kept saying to him, I don't want to buy it. I want to lease it. I want to start with a lease. It doesn't mean I'm not going to buy it eventually, but I wanted to sort of release the economic burden from the front end so we can put that to construction. So I knew that I had to go to a secondary property. So we found a second property by just searching. All I did was search through records and through aerials. And when I found something that seemed adequate, I literally reached out to the owner and said, it's not listed, but I want to get it. And this is what I want to do with it. Are you going to give it to me? And I spent 6 months back and forth with the owners until they had come to an agreement to the terms that I offered for the closing of the property. So a property that they also wanted to sell, but when I told them that my 100-year lease, if they were to keep it for 100 years, was 20 times their selling price, it doesn't really take a genius to then go for the lease. But again, I have a sort of first right of refusal on the purchase of the land. I want to maybe buy it, but I don't want to buy it in front of the construction is what I mean, yes. And that's going to be across every downtown that we visit. So Vertical Medical City is not solely Orlando, but Orlando is the first of multiple. So we're going to build as many as we can, as fast as we can for my lifetime, because the truth of the matter is, facilities to take care of the aging are short, inadequate at the moment, and construction is not going fast enough for the statistics. So I said to my team, I wanted to be me and us, really, that lead that market space when you look 20 years from now. We have a pretty strong timeline, and in my timeline, if we keep it, we break ground by the summer.
That's soon.
Yes, that is soon.
So I have a lot of questions for you. While you're sitting here talking about this, and this has all happened, how long has this happened from beginning to where we are now?
From the concept start to where we are, it's been over a year. So about a year. Less than 2 years.
Yeah. Okay, so here I got a bunch of questions, and it's not about how it's being built, or I want to know. There's the things I wrote down here are pushback. Are you getting any pushback from the people who are doing things the way they're doing them because they see the future is going to undo what they're doing? Because that's what's going to happen when you start doing this and it's successful, and the whole system is being rebuilt. Are you going to get? Are you experiencing any of that now?
Okay. Yes, but no. And I'll clarify. So there is two major hospital systems. One was my client. Both, I think, are still relentless in thinking that we're not going to get this built. Like they don't
believe
it.
Yep.
You just don't believe it.
Yeah.
One of them probably is slightly more bitter than the other. And the thing that they failed to realize is even if I change the health system as we know it, we're not a hospital. we're a residential facility. So we've created Vertical Medical City. It's a complex mixed use, but it's not a hospital. It's not an emergency room. It's not a surgical facility. Yeah. It's none of those things. It's a complex mixed use. So even if they want to kill my project, really legally, what would be their grounds to kill my project if we're residential focused?
Right.
So that's the answer to that.
Yeah.
Yes, they don't love it, but we're not competition. With what I'm doing, I don't even require certificates of need or anything from the state, which is one of the things they require for everything that they do.
Right, because you're building it as a residential development.
Because it's a mixed use. It's like a residential office, except we're residential medical office.
My next question, and this is from the very beginning, even before we started talking, how does fear factor into all of this? Because you are pushing the limits of the world. And I know that you have experience with the healthcare, and that was motivation. And then you had that meeting, and there was a man who sort of talked about how urgent this is, and you were motivated by that. But this is huge of what you're doing here.
Yeah.
And knowing you for all these years, this is going to happen. Does fear factor into this at all? Or you just sort of put that to the side and you just keep going forward? And what's motivating you to do that?
Can I just say that honest to God, I am fearless. I've always been. I will always be. There's no fear in me about anything ever. I'll take that back. You know, after we talked last, I started taking flying lessons. Because I wanted to fly my own baby food to places.
I remember
You have to listen to 189 to get that. So I was flying. And only fear set in when I started seeing the small planes crashing around me a lot. And I said, okay, I can't fly anymore. But it wasn't fear for myself as much as it was fear for my daughter. But generally with the things that I do, there is no fear. I'm the person that, even if I have the smallest, slightest of doubts, I, like you said, set them to the side. And if something goes unlike what I expected to go, then I adjust. I'm the adjuster. I'm the adjuster after the fact. And you can listen to the major leaders of any company or small companies, large companies, they will all tell you the same. If you're waiting for the time where you know it all, when you're ready, when you have it all, it is not coming. That's not coming. So I'm more of a, let's just do it and let's hope it works the way we expect it to go. And if it doesn't, then we'll adjust at the time. And that's how I operate about everything.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors here. At Entree Architect, we could not be doing this Entree Architect podcast without them. They have been here supporting us week after week after week, and I want you to go support them because they support you and vice versa and all that good stuff. So go check them out. It's FreshBooks and RCAT. Do you remember when you started your small firm? It wasn't easy, right? It was no small feat. It took lots of late nights, early mornings, and the occasional all-nighter, maybe. Bottom line, you've been insanely busy ever since launching. So why not make things a little bit easier? Well, our friends at FreshBooks have the solution. FreshBooks invoicing and accounting software is designed specifically for small business owners like us, small firm owners. It's simple, it's intuitive, and it keeps you way more organized than a dusty shoebox filled with crumpled receipts. You know how it is, right? You know what you're doing. Create and send professional looking invoices in 30 seconds and then get them paid 2 times faster. You gotta love that. 2 times faster with automated online payments. File expenses even quicker and keep them perfectly organized for tax time. And the best part? FreshBooks grows alongside your business, so you'll always have the tools you need when you need them without ever having to learn the ins and outs of accounting. Join the 24 million people who've used FreshBooks. Try it free For 30 days, there's no catch, there's no credit card required. It's free for 30 days. Visit them today at entrearchitect.com/freshbooks. That's entrearchitect.com/freshbooks. And enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section so they know that we sent you. It's what many of us small firm architects dread: editing down a manufacturer specification. It just takes way too much time. You're staring down this 54-page specification, and all you need is one product. And maybe some of its attributes. You just need that one thing. And maybe they have like 10 different products, but it's all in one specification. There's a better way. And it's not throwing that entire specification into your project documents. It's RCAT.com's Spec Wizard. It's built for you, the architect. Spec Wizard is a unique tool that allows you to specify a product in minutes, not hours, minutes, by turning a specification into a simple-to-use website. Just select the products and options you want to specify and generate a three-part CSI specification in multiple formats. And best of all, it's free. Can you believe that? It's free. It requires no registration, no credit card. It's free. Visit entrearchitect.com/RCAT. Save that URL to your favorites, and then try the better way of specifying products. Spec Wizard by RCAT.com. That's entrearchitect.com/RCAT. ARCAT. FreshBooks and RCAT, thank you for being platform sponsors. Please visit them today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. Have you always been that way? Do you know where that fearlessness comes from? Is it upbringing? Is it some sort of spirituality? Or where does it come from?
It's genetic. It's my mother. It's the way I grew up. It's everything together. I wouldn't think there's one source of that. But I've always been this way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating to watch you because, you know, I think many of us have big ideas and big plans. I mean, I have huge plans. And fear gets in the way all the time. You know, constantly.
You have to say that. I mean, what is the fear? You should be fearing death. I mean, that's really, and even then you shouldn't fear it, because that needs to, I mean, that I want to change culturally, that people are fearful of death. But that is really the only end to anything is death. I would say that instead of afraid or instead of fear, you simply, and this is how I do it, break it down. Like, what has to happen for the next thing to happen? I break it down a lot of times in writing. I try to meet my own deadlines, and everything's just about exceeding my own expectations, because I really don't put those out there for anybody else except me.
Right.
There's no fear, because I mean, what are people's basic fears? Their children, not having food to eat, not having a house. I mean, if you don't have a house, you go rent. If you don't have any food, you go work in a restaurant and wash dishes and they feed you. I mean, to me, fear is not a thing, that it shouldn't be there, because maybe it's just Tabitha, but I can give you the answer to all your fears. Like, I can actually give you an outset or an outcome beyond it. So maybe because I'm that person, I don't know.
So what keeps you motivated? I mean, this is a huge thing that you're doing. And you just keep going. Say that again.
Same bigger than the school is this one, which is surprising to me, because I was trying to stay away from the bigness, but it's almost like I can't.
Well, this is way bigger than the school.
Yeah.
Just very, very briefly explain what that means, because people are like, what are you talking about?
So there was a time where Mark knew the early Tabitha that was trying to start a college. And I guess if you go to episode 189, you'll hear more about it. So the school was about teaching people to do what I do and how I do it, the way that I do it. But that architecture and building construction and materializing infrastructure and cities is so much bigger than a design task or an engineering task or a materials methods task. I mean, to me, it's so much bigger than that, that I wanted to teach people that. But the school, you know, just like you asked me about pushback, the system as in architecture, engineering, construction, don't really want that change because all I did was drive against it. And so it's what got me sick, actually, or what started getting me sick.
Yeah.
So this is different. Okay. And that vertical medical city is so needed that the thing is, I'm like running after it. Like the thing is just running and I'm running after it. I think that if we don't build this, somebody else is going to go build it. Like we have this team, I've put this team structured and things just happen and the project just moves. I mean, and it's, in that sense, it's completely different. And you're right, so much bigger and so much broader. I do have, I mean, if you were inside my office now, you'd see that I have a world map with all the places that we're going, because Orlando is number one.
Right.
And we do intend to build in Chicago still. I had a closing deal for a property in the loop in Chicago for this, but I've opted to go bigger.
Bigger than the loop in Chicago.
Well, I want to match the density of the city. The loop in Chicago, this was a great location, but it was a very small footprint.
Yeah.
And it wasn't going to let me sort of make a dent on the actual city.
Yeah.
So I want to go into a much bigger property to do a much more dense project, basically. And we're also, we know already that we're going out of the country into Osaka, Japan, that we're going to go to London. Really everywhere in the world, this project is needed in every major metropolitan area, but I'm sure I'm not going to be able to build every one in my lifetime, but if I can accomplish, you know, 10 or 15, then I'll feel like I got somewhere.
What are your plans for the future? I mean, obviously you just said you're going to build, Orlando. Orlando's going to be the model, and then you're going to start rolling these out across the world.
Yes.
What is your plans for the future of Ponte Health? That if you can build 10 of these and it outlasts you and it outlives you, do you have plans for how it continues beyond you?
Not yet, because I'm 38 this month. I'm only about to turn 38, so I have a long way to go.
What day?
The 21st.
Oh, I'm the 25th.
Oh, my goodness. See?
Yep. 4 days.
I know, Aquarius, we're awesome.
Yes.
So I don't have a plan beyond me at this point, but I will have it.
Yeah.
Because the truth is that I see Ponte Health as sort of undivisible from healthcare, period.
Yeah.
But it's not, but again, it's infrastructure based. So it's such a complicated thing to explain. It is not that I'm going to be healthcare without the infrastructure or that I'm going to be the infrastructure without the care.
Yeah, it's just all integrated.
It is all of it. Yes. Yeah.
Do you also, and I'm this is probably unnecessary to ask, but do you have plans to also deal with the cost of healthcare and how that's handled?
Funny you asked. Yes. But for now my plans are, I wouldn't call them too basic, but they're basic, or at least at the moment, from what I've seen. So, for example, it's vertical medical city assisted living, memory care is very expensive. I don't know if you've ever gotten a chance to do to visit or inquire about an ALF and memory care, but I can tell you that they go anywhere from $7,000 to $14,000, $15,000 a month out of pocket. That is insane. Okay, so to me, that's insane. 5, 6, 7 times the average cost of a rental property, like a rental apartment. So it's really crazy. And I know that they need the care, so they have nurses and they have food and they have things that add to the cost. But I still think it's sort of unreasonably high. So what's happening is the people that are building ALF to memory care are doing it for exploitation of that real estate rental. So part of us going density or high rise and it fitting that model, that concept model that we had, is that because we're dense, we can start to lower those costs significantly. So what we have projected now is, even though we're opening into the future, we still have a cost rental that is like 30% of the market, 30-40%. And that's because of the high density. Mm-hmm. That's because of the high rise construction. That's because we have rentals on the property. They're not residential, and other things. So how do we control costs even further is things that I've thought about. So even though we'll be at 30, 40% of the market, I still want to not only inject that with lots of programming and in health services, period. So like, for example, our vertical medical city residents in light assisted living will get an annual full workup on us as part of their rents. But one of the things that I want to do is set up the building on blockchain technologies and data, like sort of high speed data stuff, and that I'm further offsetting people's cost based on them sharing their own data, which in turn now, even though I'm manipulating, say, through the infrastructure that they actually own, therefore it's offsetting their costs. So I have this economic model in my head. Mm-hmm. It's mostly in my head at this point in time, but that we're going to carry out in this in these buildings. So I think inherently the goal anyway is to create by volume this new type of resident that is going to demand things the way that we're setting them up. But by that time, then I think I don't want to call it a monopoly, but these exploitations of ALF and memory care will end. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, because you're basically looking at this as a fully self-sustaining system.
Yes.
Right? That when somebody moves in here, the exterior healthcare system doesn't exist anymore because everything they have and everything they need and the way it's paid for and the way they live is all integrated into this entire system from beginning to end.
For the most part, that is true, minus the surgical component. Mm-hmm. So I have to partner with a surgical facility, or they can take that as an independent type facility. But if they were to need any sort of surgery that is major surgery, then they would have to step away from. But that could be the case only for the first location, for all I
know. That's what I was going to ask. Is it just makes sense that you just create another piece to the system that does that on an external basis, but you own it and it becomes part of this overall system.
That could be the case. I mean, we like I mentioned, are the developer part designer, but we're the operator. So I have created already some structures where we operate some medical portions and Ponte Health owns them. For example, we have a partnership with an emergency physician where we part own the urgent care that will be on property. But the urgent care is not an emergency room. It's more your walk-in urgent care clinics that cannot do major surgery, but they can do small diagnostics and small testing and then refer you to surgery should you really need it. So we have one of those, but anything that needs a certificate of need from the state, we're currently, at least at this point in time, staying away from.
Strategically.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. This is so interesting. And we could talk for another 2 hours. Because you and I are, you know, I want to know everything you're doing. And I'm so inspired by what you're doing. I'm motivated by what you're doing.
Thank you.
We could keep going for hours. But I want, and I will bring you back as you move along and as things develop. I want to definitely follow your story and bring it back to the Entre Architect community. But I wanted to ask you before we wrap up, what is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I think I mentioned it. I'm a firm believer on writing down tasks. So I think if you can create a list of tasks every day, and you'll learn to gauge what is appropriate in the day-to-day versus weekly versus monthly, but you have to check them off. If you can do that, I think it makes for great progress. But don't do it one time. It's not like a New Year's resolution. It's like a constant task creation. And by task, I don't mean like CDs in a certain phase or percent complete. I mean, literal task of building the life in the firm that you want. Yeah. Like, what is it that you want? And sometimes what you want changes over time. I mean, look at me. I college construction, development, a health system. I mean, I would have never known that if I wasn't the person that was perpetually seeking the best of my life.
Very, very good. And so just take one step at a time, decide what you want your life to be, break it down into smaller pieces, and then go after them one at a time. and just accomplish one at a time, and you'll find that you end up where you want to be.
Yes, and listen to the world. Like, don't just do that and omit. Call them signs, God, you know, whatever you want to call it, inspiration. The world talks to you. So if you listen, okay, your tasks will align with that best life and that best firm. And if when you do those two things, you're in what people call an alignment, an enlightenment. And that is how you get there.
I agree. And
I mean, really.
That's how I ended up where I am now with Entree Architect. That's how Entree Architect has grown. It's just me following the path. I just keep going to the next step. I see something over there and I have a big idea and a big plan, but I just keep following the path that I think I should be on. And I keep ending up where I am, you know, wherever I turn around, there I am.
Yes. And it's not overnight either.
Right.
I have to constantly remind people, you don't wake up one day and say, this is what I want. And then you have that a month from now. No, it's like persistent, relentless, long-term strategic commitment and learning and reading and writing and following tasks.
Yeah.
Long-term.
Yeah. Long-term. It takes patience. And I hope a lot of our younger listeners are listening to that as well, because I find that a lot of the younger listeners that are in our community, and I was like this too, I wanted it right now. You know, I'm working so hard, I should have this right now. And as I've gotten older, I realized that this is a lifetime journey, that what I'm building is going to far outweigh me, far outlast me. And my job is to just build it so it can be taken beyond me. If I don't build it, then there's nothing there for someone else to take on and continue.
Yes.
Because I want to do to the architecture world, the architecture profession, what you're doing to the healthcare profession. I want to completely change the way we're practicing architecture at the small firm level. And I have very big plans, maybe at the same level as your plans, that I haven't talked about, that I haven't revealed.
Are you revealing them?
There's a lot of fear involved in all
that
of that.
2019? Forget the fear.
I know. But that's
2019?
I'll talk about them. I will talk about them soon. I need to sort of solidify them and before I announce them. But it's exciting to have a purpose like that. You have a purpose. You know that purpose. You are pursuing that purpose every day. I feel the same way. I have a purpose. I've been here. I've been put here to do what I'm doing. And I'm just continuing to move forward to make it happen. And so I love talking to you. It opens that up inside of me and gets me motivated and gets me excited. So thanks for spending about an hour with me here and sharing your story. We can't wait to hear the next step in this. So I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
And it's exciting to watch you. Thank you for sharing your knowledge here at Entree Architect Podcast. Before we go, where is the best place for people to sort of follow what you're doing? Is there a website or social media? Where should people go to thank you for sharing today and for following your progress?
Yes. So Ponte Health is basically Ponte Health, P-O-N-T-E Health, across everything. So PonteHealth.com and then every social media, with the exception of Instagram, which I believe I had to put the PA at the end, Ponte Health PA, because Instagram stole my first account. They shut it down. I don't know why. If you want to follow the project specifically, so we have project specific social media and locations. So it's Vertical Medical City. There's a lot of content online and about the progress of it as a project and us as leading the project and owning the project. And then for Vertical Medical City Orlando specifically, there's VMC ORL. So I'm matching VMC to the basically airport code or so. So VMC ORL is on Twitter and Instagram, though not a lot, and on Facebook and stuff like that. So there's the Ponte Health, the parent company, and then project specific Vertical Medical City. And as you know, I love disaster babies, so I'm trying to work on that. And then that's it. I mean, people are welcome to visit the office. We're in Orlando, by appointment only, by the way. And then And then I do intend to open other locations, but have not been able to successfully do it, Chicago being the first. But I haven't, we haven't made it there yet. And that's it. I wish I could have a podcast. I think about a podcast all the time with what I'm doing.
With all the extra time you have?
Well, not for that, but I think sometimes, like, I'm wondering if people would listen to, say, the development of Vertical Medical City on YouTube or on a podcast. But I really, I can't, like, I just can't. Like, with, I have like 5 full-time jobs just trying to develop that building.
I think a YouTube channel to follow the progress of Vertical Medical City would be fascinating. I think that people would blow it up. And here's what I think. If there's anybody who's listening who wants to do that for Tabitha, where they just follow you around, they record what you're doing, they edit it, they publish it, you own it, Tabitha. If anybody's interested in doing that, reach out to Tabitha and talk to her about it.
So much fun. I would love that. I would love that. I really can do it, but I think about it all the time. I know that we're going to have construction cameras, multiples for 24/7, like some people do, but I'm going to actually publicly feed them online. And then I don't know if you know, but artificial intelligence is a big part of this building. So facial recognition is a technology that's going into the building. I mean, it really, when you think about buildings and movies, when they're really far advanced, that's what this project is.
Yeah. I think the videos, a YouTube channel to follow that progress is not only important for the marketing of it. I think it's important for the documentation of it because you're changing the world. You're changing the world of healthcare dramatically. And by having somebody follow that and document that process, and it doesn't have to be like documentation, sort of, you know, a documentary, it's a YouTube channel, you know, it's a vlog that follows you around and follows your progress, documenting what you're doing, because someday people are going to want to know how you started this. And if you have a full video archive of how this happened and how you got to where you are, when you have 50 of these across the world, it's going to be really valuable to the world.
That would be so much fun. Yes, if somebody's listening that wants to do it.
reach out to Tabitha at PonteHealth.com. I think, you know, I think that'd be fascinating. I'd subscribe. I watch every day.
Oh, thank you.
All right, Tabitha. Thank you. Thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for sharing and being so transparent. And like I said, it's always motivational and inspirational to listen to you. So thanks for hanging out with us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. And everybody have a great year. Make it the best year.
So there you go. That is absolutely an episode to share with a friend. This is episode 253. So it's entrearchitect.com/episode253. That is the link to share. Please share it with a friend so the world can hear Tabitha's story. What an inspirational story. Tabitha is so inspirational. Every time we talk, I am so motivated to keep building Entree Architect into the movement where every small firm architect can do their part to change the world by building strong, thriving businesses. I am so pumped, so motivated to do this every time I speak with Tabitha. Every project we complete as architects helps to change the world. There are few professions. Are there any professions that can make that claim? We as architects change the world with every project we do. But we can't do it. We can't have the impact without building a strong foundation, without building a thriving, profitable business that will allow us to focus on the work that we love and the people that we want to influence. So let's do this. Let's build profitable businesses together. I will show you how. Just register now for the Entree Architect Profit Checklist. It is a free live webinar that I'm hosting on January 22nd, 2018. And it's not too late to prepare your firm for profit this year. Join me and I'll show you the 6 essential elements of a proven financial management system for small firm architects. It's free. Just go visit entrearchitect.com/freewebinar for more information and to register now. That's entrearchitect.com/freewebinar. Go there now, register, and I'll see you on January 22nd. My name is Mark Arlepage, and I am an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you to go build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, share. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.